In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police, who investigate crime, and the Crown prosecutors, who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
A cat runs upstairs. A frumpy middle-aged woman climbs the stairs.
Are you up there? You're a naughty boy. You know you shouldn't run off like that. And if you think you're going to sit on my lap all evening, watching TV...
She stops as she sees the door to a flat ajar.
Oh. Jenny?
Paper lies strewn across the carpet of the gloomy flat.
Jenny? Jenny?
The woman stoops and picks up a black and white framed photo from the debris, replacing it on a table. The woman warily pushes open the door to a bedroom and edges inside.
Jenny?
The room has been ransacked, lamps lie on their sides. The woman finds a gaunt old woman lying on her back, glassy-eyed. A Socco team worker's Ronnie enters the Crouch End home of Jenny Moran.
Jenny Moran, 83, bruises on her arms, face and torso.
Right.
Blood. Internal bleeding.
What, you think someone's beat her up?
Or she fell.
Ronnie looks at a photo of young Jenny.
Shame. Nice smile. Right, what else, mate?
The lady that found her.
Where's she?
She's next door.
Name?
Harriet Pelham, and she lives just downstairs from here.
Okay, thank you. Hello, Harriet. Hello there. My name is Ronnie Brooks. I'm a detective sergeant. How are you? Not good. Okay. Harriet, what can you tell us about Jenny Moran?
Jenny and I were friends. Mm-hmm. Ignatius at Chimpong wouldn't just go into anyone's flat. Was my cat.
Oh, right, I see.
Jenny was very fond of Ignatius.
Harriet, did you notice anyone hanging around the flats that you didn't recognise, or did you hear or see anything this morning or last night out of the ordinary?
Nothing at all. They took the clock.
The clock?
The silver carriage clock.
Right.
It should be on the mantelpiece next to the Virgin Mary.
All right, well, look, that's really helpful. Thanks, Harriet. Jackie will take care of you right now, and I'll speak to you again later on. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
All right, okay.
Ronnie's sympathetic smile wilts into a frown of confusion as he paces back through the hall into the bedroom where the Socco team work around the body in blue plastic overalls. He stands by the mantelpiece, then lifts up the Virgin Mary statuette.
All this for a clock? Mater Dolorosa. Our Lady of Sorrows.
He looks back at Jenny's body. London skyline from the air. Law. Bradley Walsh as DS Ronnie Brooks. Paul Nichols as DS Sam Casey. Patterson Joseph as DI Wes Layton. Order. Dominic Rowan as SCP Jacob Thorne, Georgia Taylor as CP Kate Barker, and Peter Davison as CPS Henry Sharp. Law and Order, UK. This episode, Mortal. In the morgue.
No signs of trauma on Jenny Moran's body, blunt or otherwise. No evidence of violence at all.
So she did just pop her clogs then?
Well, they're not eating. Didn't help.
Ronnie opens the bin for Lily to throw away her plastic apron.
Thank you, Ron.
Welcome.
Hypertension, diminished organs, kidney failure, dehydration, plus loss of adipose tissue, rock bottom levels of insulin while her glucagon was through the roof.
Thanks, Lily. That's a great help.
I know how she ended up, Ron, just not how she got there.
Ronnie and Sam walk with Wes down the corridor.
Wes, we don't know how she died. The bruises are inconclusive.
Or how about when?
Lily thinks about 12 hours before she was found.
They went through everything, but the only thing that was missing so far is a carriage clock.
Any witnesses?
Well, none except for Ignatius Akinpong.
Who?
The neighbour's cat.
All right, well, this is a robbery that went wrong. They break in, she interrupts them.
She's died of a heart attack, maybe, or a fall or failure of any one of about half a dozen organs.
Is she that bad?
Yes, she was.
Next of kin are in the family room.
Thanks, Ange.
Ron, take care of that, please. Sam, yeah. Usual suspects, pawn shops, known fences. See if anyone's seen a silver carriage clock.
I told Jenny to move. I told her she'd be better off in a home, but she wouldn't listen. Connie, maybe, but not to me. She said that she didn't want to be surrounded by old, drooling people. My mother-in-law was a snob.
That's not fair, Mum. She loved being in her own home, surrounded by her own things. At least that way she could hold on to some dignity. She said that if she left home, it would kill her. Only she was wrong, wasn't she?
Oh, sweetheart. It's all right.
It's okay, please. Apart from yourselves, did anyone else know that your gran lived alone?
She didn't. Cecile lived with her.
Cecile?
Cecile the Karma. She cared for Gran, has done for about 6 months.
Really? Well, there was no sign of anyone else living at that flat when we went there.
That's not possible.
The last time I was there was Tuesday, and she was there then. They were playing Boggle. Gran liked that.
Okay, and where'd you get her from?
According to the agency, Cecile Bakama arrived in England from the Congo 3 years ago. They say she is conscientious, patient and dedicated. Poster girl stuff.
Yeah? No complaints, accusations, items going AWOL?
Not a whiff.
All right. Can you get a contact address for her?
Well, the agency also told us that she went back to the Congo 2 months ago.
Hey?
Yeah, visa expired.
All right. So, Cecile tells her agency she's going home, but instead she stayed with Jenny Moran.
Nice anonymous address, always paid in rarities, immigration none the wiser.
Okay, so your thinking is Cecile tried robbing Jenny Moran, it went wrong, and...
Yeah? Absolutely.
Okay, what next?
Well, apparently another Congolese girl joined the agency just around about the same time as Cecile Bakama. Now, she may know where Cecile lives. Look, two girls coming from the same country, same job, it's worth a punt.
Bit of a stretch, isn't it?
We'll all limber up.
Yes, we joined the same time. Cecile looks after that old lady.
Mrs. Moran.
Nice lady. But always sick. Always something wrong.
Like what?
Her head, her stomach. Never stopped her from going to Mass, though, every week. Cecile's the same.
Do you know which church she went to?
Cecile? Mm-mm. But she's the one that needs to ask for forgiveness.
Why did she do something wrong?
She needs locking up. She's a thief.
She stole from Mrs. Moran.
Mrs. Moran? No. Who cares about her? Me. She stole my boyfriend, Olivier Dondo. If you want to find that potential, we're in his flat. And you can tell her there aren't enough Hail Marys in the world for what she's done.
Ronnie and Sam knock on Olivier Dondo's flat door. The muscular young guy scowls at them.
Quoi?
I'm DS Casey. This is DS Brooks. It's Cecile, and we'd like a word.
Je ne comprends pas.
Cecile Bakama?
Je ne la connais pas.
Parlez-vous anglais?
Non.
Olivier, on peut faire ça en français si vous préférez, mais j'ai l'impression que mon collègue serait bien plus content. Oui?
Ronnie smirks.
Olivier, it's okay.
Thank you. Hello, Cecile. We'd like to talk to you about Jenny Moran.
Why? Is something wrong?
Yeah, you could say that. She's dead.
Dead?
All right, if we come in.
You have a warrant?
Ah, there you go. You see how easy this English thing is once you get going?
Warrant.
We'd just like to come in and have a look around, if that's okay.
Yeah. You've got nothing to hide. Have you?
No warrant, no looking.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just one thing. Why weren't you at Mrs. Moran's the day she died?
Why would I be? I was fired.
By Mrs. Moran?
No. Her granddaughter.
C'est tout. Enough.
Fluent French.
Still waters, Sammy. Still waters.
Finsbury home of Connie Moran.
Of course I didn't fire her. Why would she say something like that?
Ronnie cocks his head and raises his eyebrow.
My God. She killed Gran, is that what you think?
Well, what do you think? Is it possible?
Well...
Well, what?
I wasn't going to say anything, but things started to go missing from the flat. Nothing valuable, just little things.
Why didn't you fire her then?
It wasn't worth it.
But you said she was stealing from your Gran.
Well, amongst other things, Gran was doubly incontinent. Seriously, it's not like we had carers lining up down the street.
Hang on a minute. Your grandmother's burgled, and you didn't think to mention that her carer was stealing from her.
But they broke in. Why would Cecile do that? She had keys.
Ronnie and Wes at HQ.
Well, she has a point. Unless Cecile's covering herself, pretending there was a break-in.
I don't think she's that clever, Wes, I really don't. But Olivier Dondo, by the way, has got previous 2 convictions for burglary and a robbery charge that was later dropped.
All right, try this on then. Connie fires Cecile, takes back the keys. But Olivier now, he fancies a bit of payback, so...
Yeah, except Connie Moran reckons she didn't fire her, so...
Yeah, what, even though she admits Cecile was stealing? Come on.
No, look, Wes, her gran liked Cecile, trusted her. Maybe Connie thought that was more important than a few odds and ends.
It's a bit more than that. Look, Ron, go back to Olivier's gaff, yeah, but it's time to take a warrant.
We might not need to. The clock's been found.
An interview room.
The thing is, Cecile, about 3 hours ago, a man comes in to see us. Now, this man owns a pawnbroker's in Kilburn High Road. And he told us that a couple had been in to pawn a silver carriage clock. So we showed him some photographs. He ID'd Olivier Dondo. And he gave us a pretty good description of you. So I need to know, how did you come by that carriage clock?
My client says Mrs. Moran gave it to her.
Really? That was nice. So you wanted a pawn, someone's present they gave you.
I needed...
We've given you a perfectly innocent explanation of how the clock came to be in her possession, which you can't disprove.
Well, I'm not interested about the clock. I'm interested in how Mrs. Jenny Moran came to be dead in her flat.
Which Miss Bacama is happy to help you in any way she can.
By handing over her boyfriend, Olivier Dondo.
He didn't do anything.
Cecile locks looks with Ronnie, then hangs her head as he narrows his eyes.
Cecile.
He broke down the door, but that's all. We knocked, but there was no answer. I told Olivier to kick in the door, and when we got in, we found Mrs. Moran on the floor.
And then just ransacked the flat.
I was looking for her pills. I was desperate, but they weren't where they should have been. It didn't matter. She was already dead.
Ronnie shoots a glance at Cecile's smug-looking lawyer.
So, why did you leave her? Why didn't you call 999?
I don't want to be sent home. My family...
Go on.
I need to earn money. I send them what I can. It's why I pawned the clock for the money. I would never harm Mrs. Moran.
All right, so why break down the door? Why not just use the keys you had?
I gave them back when I was fired.
Well, Connie Moran says that didn't happen.
It did.
So what did you do? Tell Olivier and he wanted to get
no.
even? He became angry, broke the door
down? I went back because I was worried. I was fired because Connie caught me trying to give Mrs. Moran extra food and water. She told me not to, but...
You're telling me Connie Moran told you not to feed her grandmother?
At first, I tried to do as she asked, but the amounts got smaller and smaller. Mrs. Moran, she was so thin. There was nothing there. It broke my heart.
My client kept these.
The lawyer hands Ronnie a clear sealed bag.
Sunday, 1 small glass of water. Monday, 1/2 a potato. Tuesday, 2 spoons of mashed swede.
Connie Moran's instructions. A how-to for starving her grandmother to death.
Ronnie eyes forlorn Cecile.
She starved her.
Oh, Thursday, 1 apple only. Friday, 1 carrot, etc., etc.
And can we prove that the granddaughter actually wrote these? Because until we can, the other two are still in the flat.
It's not them, Wes.
Well, even though they tried to pawn the clock.
Olivia Dondo's MO is waving crowbars about not withholding carrots.
Okay.
Ronnie and Sam outside a church with slim young brunette Connie.
Will this take long?
I don't think so.
I'm trying to arrange my grandmother's funeral, at least what I can until her body's released.
Colin, were you responsible for your grandmother's food intake?
What's that got to do with anything?
She starved to death.
Did you write these?
Come on. You think that I... Do you know how ridiculous that is?
That is your handwriting, though, isn't it?
So? I had to spell it out to Cecile. She didn't get it. She thought I was being cruel.
Half a cup of water?
Her kidneys were a problem. Her liquids had to be restricted. I was just doing what I was told.
By who?
Office of Dr. Hastings, Crouch End.
Jenny Moran had IgA nephropathy. It's an inflammation of the glomerulus which developed.
Her kidneys backed up.
Chronic renal failure, to which you could add rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, 15 rounds with pneumonia, and the broken hip she sustained last Christmas. Jenny Moran was holding on with spit and willpower. Technical term.
Did you advise her granddaughter to monitor her water intake?
And protein, salt, potassium.
Did that help?
I've really no idea. Mrs. Moran changed consultants 6 months ago.
Do you know why?
My office received a phone call. It was telling us that Mrs. Moran wouldn't be coming in anymore.
And it was her that called, yeah?
No, her granddaughter did.
Wes prunes a bonsai as he listens to Ronnie in his office.
The doc may well have told her to watch Jenny's diet, but the post-it notes were all Connie's work. It's the first he'd heard of them.
So she thought she was, you know, following doctor's orders. We can't arrest her for that.
She said she was going to change doctors, Wes, except no one ever requested Jenny Moran's records. Connie had her grandmother all to herself, mate.
Still a bit of a stretch, though, because even if we're right, there are easier ways to kill someone.
Not crueler ones.
Okay, Connie Moran certainly had means and opportunity, but what about motive?
She's the only next of kin.
Maybe there's a will.
You know what they say, Wes? Where there's a will,
there's a relative.
Silverhead Jonathan Norton joins Ronnie and Sam outside the courtrooms.
Sorry, Ronnie.
Hey, Jonathan, thanks for your time with this Jenny Moran business. I appreciate it.
Well, if you're looking for an eccentric millionaire, you're going to be disappointed. I've been Jenny's solicitor for years. She had a little money when she left a charity.
Nothing for her granddaughter.
A few items of jewellery, nothing of great value. Beyond sentiment, that is.
Jonathan, did Connie know that she wasn't going to get anything? I mean, if she thought she was going to inherit...
She wasn't that bothered.
Really?
Not when she had Jenny's flat.
Ronnie and Angela at MIU Central Headquarters.
According to the Land Registry, Jenny Moran owned the flat outright.
Right.
2 months ago, Connie was made joint tenant.
Meaning?
When Jenny died, Connie became sole owner.
Right, whole kit and caboodle.
She hasn't wasted any time borrowing against it. She's just taken out a mortgage.
Well, why would she do that if she owned the whole thing?
I've got a pretty good idea.
Go on, then.
Well, 18 months ago, Connie Moran was a witness to a car crash.
Oh.
Also, she gave a statement and she had to give her occupation.
Which is a company director.
Yeah. Company house has her listed as director of Mogo Life Software. Now, in the last 2 months, they've been given 3 wind-up orders.
So she's going bankrupt.
No, not anymore. All 3 creditors have just withdrawn their orders.
Ah, someone's been paying the bills.
The Mogo office.
70 grand.
And Connie paid them off, yeah?
Yeah, luckily. Now we were going under.
You didn't wonder where the money came from?
A gram left it, didn't you?
Well, just when you both needed it. Very lucky, I'd say, wouldn't you?
Look, I've known Connie a long time. The person she loved most in this world was her grand.
I've heard that a lot.
Weekends, evenings, she was always going round.
Devoted granddaughter, yeah, I get it, I really do.
You want proof? Thursday night, we had a meeting, suppliers we owed money to. Connie insisted we stop by just to check on her gran. She was that worried.
Well, that's interesting, because Thursday night was the night before her gran was found dead. So, did you go up to the flat with her?
No, it was only for a few minutes. She said she was sleeping.
Really?
You can't think. Look, we were under a shitload of pressure, but all Connie thought about was her gran. That's what I meant.
Kate's in Wes's office.
There's no weapon, no proof.
but she did say the last time she was in the flat was 3 days before Jenny Moran died. But we know she was in the flat the day before.
So?
So her grandmother was still alive. She didn't do anything to help her.
At conjecture.
Let me finish. Instead, she went to a meeting with her creditors, promised them that they'd get paid, a promise she now knew she could keep.
You've only got the carer's word that she was fired, and you can't prove that she and her boyfriend didn't finish her off when they broke in.
She starved her grandmother to death, Kate, so she can get her hands on the flat and save her company.
It's death by omission.
It's murder.
Ronnie and Sam wait outside the church as Connie emerges with other mourners.
Ronnie, look.
Connie and her mother walk over, arm in arm.
Hello.
Connie Moran, I'm arresting you for the murder of Jenny Moran. You do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention it's something you may go on in court.
This is ridiculous! Connie,
it's not murder, Jake. It's not anything.
She lied to her grandmother. She lied to the police.
Jenny Moran died from natural causes.
She died from lack of food and water.
Really? Because according to the post-mortem, she had kidney disease, a weak heart, hypertension, any one of which could have killed her. Are you honestly going to try for Miss Scarlet in the library with the candlestick?
Starvation's a weapon too.
And Connie Moran ended up with her grandmother's flat.
Because she was her grandmother. It's not that you haven't got a case, you haven't got a crime. But if you want to try and prove omission, be my guest.
Thank you.
But you'll also have to prove Jenny Moran wouldn't have died anyway.
Your client accelerated death by her actions.
Jenny Moran was dying, and I'll have a string of doctors who'll swear malnutrition was incidental. And if the experts can't agree as to the cause of death, how can you expect a jury to?
Jacob and Kate in Henry's office.
He was always going to argue causation, muddy the waters.
It's all he can do.
You ready for him?
Connie Moran was responsible for her grandmother's death. What she did doesn't have to be the sole or main cause, merely a substantial...
It also has to be beyond reasonable doubt, which the jury will have to be sure of to convict.
She might as well have given the old lady a fatal injection.
No, it's not the same.
I think it is. She was her de facto custodian.
What? She had a duty of care.
Her actions killed the person whose well-being she claimed to be responsible for.
Then get her on gross negligence manslaughter.
Vijay Prasad will argue that Connie was exercising that duty.
What, by starving her?
By following doctor's orders. Besides, you can only argue duty of care if Jenny Moran was mentally incapable of looking after herself.
Then I suggest you find out.
Caroline Moran.
You're all wrong, you know.
Yes, your mother...
Connie would never... It's absurd.
Well, did you see your mother-in-law in the weeks before she died, Mrs. Moran?
Of course not. We weren't close.
Oh, did she seem confused at all?
Had she become forgetful and...
Was she senile, do you mean? Not a chance. Her body might have been falling apart, but her brain was fine. Shame it wasn't the other way around. She might have been a nicer person. You didn't know her.
So her mental faculty...
I know what you're trying to do. You think my daughter tricked her grandmother and then once she got her hands on the flat, she...
Mrs. Moran.
Listen, Connie loved Jenny. And after Connie's dad died, whatever love Jenny had, she kept it for Connie. Jenny knew exactly what she was doing when she made Connie joint tenant. She wasn't confused, she wasn't forgetful, and she wasn't tricked.
Kate hangs up her phone with Jacob.
Thanks. Bye. Caroline will swear to her mother-in-law's competency. We can't argue duty of care.
Which leaves us with murder. Which is fine, by the way, because that's what it is.
Even without any proof? Where's the physical evidence?
There isn't any. There never was.
What if we...
No, no more games. No more manoeuvring. We trust the system.
Jake.
A helpless old woman was starved to death in cold blood. We go in there, put it in front of a jury, let them decide.
BJ grills Lily in the witness stand in court.
According to your report, Jenny Moran died when her heart developed arrhythmia and stopped beating.
Heart failure, yes.
That didn't happen in isolation, did it? It's your evidence that the cause was malnutrition.
Correct.
The truth is, you don't know what it was, do you?
I know she didn't eat.
No, that's right, she didn't. Jenny Moran also had kidney failure, heart disease, and immune deficiency. Is that unusual?
She was 83.
Is it possible any one of these or a combination could have caused the arrhythmia?
It's possible, yes.
Is it also possible that someone with these conditions could suffer a loss of appetite? Doctor?
Yes.
So, in fact, the malnutrition might not have even been a cause. It might just have been another symptom. Isn't that possible?
Yes. I suppose so.
Nothing further.
From the dock, Connie glances at in the gallery. Jacob has Dr. Hastings on the stand.
I wrote it. I was outlining the dietary requirements for Mrs. Moran. Protein, potassium, fluid intake and so forth, after she'd been diagnosed with CRF.
CRF?
Chronic renal failure. Maintaining a strict diet is vital, although, had I realized what she was doing, really, half a potato.
Were you surprised when you discovered Connie Moran had decided her grandmother shouldn't see you anymore?
Leading, my lord, there is nothing to suggest this was my client's decision. In fact, the Crown have no way of knowing whose decision it was.
Do you have a question, Mr. Thorne?
My lord. How did you feel when Connie Moran informed you her grandmother was going to see another doctor?
It happens. I didn't dwell on it.
And when you discovered that she had, in fact, not seen any other doctor?
Well, that did bother me. It was foolish and dangerous. That woman needed expert care.
Connie glances aside in the dock.
Thank you.
Jacob sits down beside Kate. Tall, suave Vijay rises in gown and periwig.
I imagine patients leaving you is a sort of occupational hazard.
As I said, it happens.
You diagnosed the CRF in June last year.
Yes.
And at that time, how long had Jenny Moran been a patient of yours?
She was referred to me in October of the previous year, following a bout of pneumonia.
8 months, then?
Yes.
8 months? To diagnose chronic renal failure?
You can appear quite well, you know, with a chronic condition. It's long term. That's the difference between chronic and acute.
I'm sure we're all grateful to you for clearing that up. If a chronic condition goes undiagnosed, will it get worse?
Of course.
Vijay hands a folder to a court clerk who carries it across to Dr. Hastings in the witness stand.
Are these your notes, Doctor?
Yes.
Made following your first consultation with Jenny Moran?
Yes.
Would you read the highlighted section, please?
Patient presented little or no appetite, vomiting, fatigue, swollen ankles.
What causes swollen ankles, Doctor?
Fluid retention.
And what did you do when presented with these symptoms?
They could have been caused by any number
of things. They weren't, were they? Jenny Moran was already in stage 4 renal failure, and you were so late diagnosing it, the damage had been done.
No, that's not... You can't just...
Connie Moran didn't take away her grandmother because she was foolish, Doctor, and it wasn't sinister. She did it because she didn't trust you. Isn't that the truth?
That is ridiculous.
She wanted what was best for her grandmother. She wanted to keep her alive. And after her experience with you, she believed she was in the best position to do that.
Connie darts a look at Hastings. A smile plays across her lips.
In what way dangerous?
I'm sorry?
Mr. Thorne here asked you about Connie Moran taking away her grandmother, and you said it was foolish and dangerous.
That's right.
Was that wounded pride talking, Doctor?
Don't be absurd.
It's understandable. Lash out a little, especially...
Of course it was dangerous.
Why?
Because renal failure is a killer.
It is, isn't it?
Jake, Kate, and Henry drink late at night in Henry's office.
Vijay Prasad is going to have the jury doubting their own names.
You knew it was going to happen the minute you decided it was murder.
It was murder.
If Connie Moran had wanted to kill her grandmother, why not just hold a pillow over her face?
I don't know. I don't need to.
Not to mention Cecile and the paper trail of brightly coloured post-it notes for the police to find.
Maybe she just wasn't thinking. Maybe she was more interested in getting her hands on the flat to pay her bills.
Why do you hate her so much?
I don't. But she was the only real family Jenny Moran had, and instead of taking care of her, she left her to die. Things like that, you have to pay for.
Instead of taking care of her, she left her to die.
That's right.
You can't make up for your mum by punishing Connie Moran.
Go home, get some rest. You've got the neighbour in the morning.
Kate cross-examines Harriet on the witness stand the next day.
She wanted my advice for a birthday present. She wanted to buy something nice for Connie.
How was her mood?
Jenny loved getting things for Connie, making a fuss. She said Connie spent so much time with her that She deserved it. The African girl who lived in, she stopped me from seeing Jenny. Connie's orders, she said. It isn't terribly surprising now that we know what she was doing.
Opinion, my lord, and hearsay, hardly facts.
The witness will confine herself to what she saw and what she heard.
No more questions.
Were you ever told why you weren't allowed to see Jenny Moran?
No. Never.
Did you know Jenny Moran had been recently charged by a builder for work that was never done?
Well, how could I?
Or that she'd been routinely overcharged by her milkman?
Well, you can't always trust strangers.
Which was why Connie Moran made sure people didn't take advantage of her. You borrowed £500 from her, didn't you?
I don't see...
That's what happened, isn't it?
I was going to pay her back.
But you didn't, did you? Perhaps Connie Moran knew it wasn't just strangers you can't trust.
Oh. You're supposed to leap up and object. I've seen it. That man made me look like a criminal.
Well, it would have helped if you'd mentioned the money when you were first interviewed.
I didn't think it was relevant.
How about now?
Don't get shirty with me just because you didn't do your job. One day you'll get old too, and invisible. Your whole life in a heartbeat.
Kate.
I'm sorry. I should have seen Vijay come in.
Forget it.
You know, he'll try something similar with Cecile Bakama this afternoon.
I doubt that. She's being deported today.
You assured me the burglary charges against my client would be dropped.
They have been, and I've applied to the Home Office to delay deportation proceedings.
I want them cancelled altogether.
We can't do that.
Please, I don't want to be sent back. I need to send my family money. They need me here.
It isn't in my power.
Then talk to someone whose power it is. Or Miss Bakama leaves as planned, and you find yourself another witness.
Don't play games with me.
Jacob has Cecile on the witness stand as Connie looks on from the dock.
Connie caught me trying to give extra food to her grandmother. She was very angry.
Can you tell the jury what happened?
She told me to leave right away.
Why not call the police if you truly thought Connie Moran was trying to starve her grandmother?
I had no visa.
You were afraid she'd tell the authorities?
Yes.
Did you see Jenny Moran again?
I went back to the flat that afternoon, but Connie wouldn't let me in.
You went back?
I still had Mrs. Moran's glasses.
So you gave them back to her?
No, Connie wouldn't let me in, so she took the glasses. She said that her grandmother was asleep and wasn't to be disturbed.
Thank you.
Jacob sits beside Kate. Vijay rises.
Was anyone else there to hear Connie Moran say this?
We were alone.
You and your boyfriend, Olivier Dondo, were arrested for burglary.
But they let us go.
You took a carriage clock.
It was a present, and they let us go.
A valued present you took to the pawn shop.
But that's...
You don't have a valid visa, do you? In fact, you were due to be deported yesterday.
That's right.
And in return for uncorroborated and, for all we know, entirely fictitious evidence against my client...
My lord...
Mr. Thorne here made sure you remained in this country, isn't that true?
My lord...
Nothing further.
Did I, or anyone else in the Crown Prosecution Service, tell you or put pressure on you to alter your evidence in any way?
No.
And where will you be tomorrow?
Tomorrow. I'm being deported.
Vijay broods in the defence bench. Jacob and Kate walk out onto the court steps in normal clothes.
Some of Vijay Prasad's punches landed, but we're still standing.
We've got Connie tomorrow.
Prasad will lay on the family devotion with a trowel.
Jake.
But I'm ready. Prasad can do what he likes.
Illegal immigrants sometimes go years without being found out, right?
So?
So, how come the border agency found Cecile so quickly?
Ronnie and Sam at the UK border agency.
She was on our watch list, but you know, low priority.
So what changed?
Anonymous tip-off. Someone phoned in her name, address, the works.
They were keen.
Well, wanting to get rid of noisy neighbours usually. It all needs to be checked out, though. Just adds to the workload.
This call, when was it made?
The border agent checks her computer. Vijay cross-examines Connie on the stand.
I only ever wanted what was best for Gran.
And yet you lied to the police about when you last saw her.
I was ashamed. I didn't want anyone to know I'd been there and not... I should have...
done something.
When she died, you became sole owner of her flat.
That's right.
And straight away, you borrowed £70,000 against it.
Yes, I put money into my company.
Because?
We were going under. We were desperate. Creditors closing in, and I could help. I know that in hindsight, this looks bad, but I loved my grandmother. And she loved me. I would have never have done anything to hurt her.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Mr. Thorne.
Jacob sits alone on the prosecution bench, gazing at the door at the rear of the court. He turns and stands.
Did you tell your grandmother about the creditors?
No. Why would I?
Because you were desperate. Because she owned the flat outright and could borrow against it.
I didn't want to concern her.
Not that desperate, then.
My lord.
Mr. Thorne.
Kate smiles at Jacob as she comes in the back door and hands him a page of paper.
When you're ready, Mr. Thorne.
Vijay sinks down as Kate takes her seat. Jacob has the sheet.
You fired Cecile Bakama for feeding your grandmother, didn't you?
I didn't want to. But getting my grandmother's diet right was vital, and she simply didn't understand.
You regretted it?
I liked her. And so did Gran, but she left me no choice.
Then you lied to the police about firing her.
I was just trying to protect her. I mean, I couldn't imagine she was involved in the burglary in any way.
I see.
I didn't want the police going after her.
So you lied about Cecile, and you lied about the last time you saw your grandmother. You must feel ashamed about quite a lot.
My lord, this sounds like a speech.
Ask a question, Mr. Thorne, or sit down.
What about the other lie?
Other lie?
You told the police you didn't know where Cecile lived.
That's right.
Yet, earlier that day, the UK Border Agency received an anonymous phone call giving them Cecile's address so she could be deported. Did you make that call?
My lord, this is the first I've heard anything about this.
My lord, this information only came to light today. This is Miss Moran's mobile phone records, my lord. I wish to enter them into evidence because on the day in question, they show a call was made.
Okay. Yes.
You made that call?
Yes.
You wanted Cecile Bakama deported?
Yes.
You were afraid she'd talk?
Yes.
She'd tell the truth?
Yes.
That you killed your grandmother?
No. That she killed herself.
Jacob's brow furrows. Connie casts a harrowed gaze around the court towards the jury, then at her mother, agonizing in the gallery.
She knew. Gran knew what she was doing. She'd tell me that all her friends were dead. What was the point? She couldn't sleep. The pain was... I begged her to eat, but she'd made up her mind.
You're asking us to believe that your grandmother starved herself to death.
If you're not a Catholic, you can't understand.
I understand perfectly well.
Then you'll know she could never have committed suicide, not as a Catholic. She couldn't take pills or cut her wrists. At least this way, it wasn't a sin, it was God's will. As a sinner, she believed she couldn't be buried next to Dad. Not in consecrated ground.
And Cecile, why the tip-off?
She's a Catholic. She knows what guilt means. I was afraid that she'd confess.
You're put on trial for murder, and then suddenly you remember, actually, it was suicide.
It's the truth.
It's convenient.
If my grandmother sinned...
Her only sin was to trust you.
Suicide's a mortal sin.
So's murder.
All I did was watch. I knew what Gran had done and I lied about it. That's my sin. I can be forgiven for lying. Suicide is the only sin for which there is no forgiveness.
Connie looks around again. Jacob addresses the jury.
We've heard a great deal from Mr. Prasad and his client. He's tried to dazzle you with his smoke and mirrors, his attempts to cloud the medical evidence, throwing up doubt where none exists. Then suddenly, like a rabbit out of a hat, we're told this wasn't murder at all, but suicide. And no ordinary suicide, but one shrouded in talk of mortal sin and eternal damnation. And it's all there to get you to take your eye off the ball, which is something that you mustn't do. The facts of this case are very simple. Connie Moran needed money to prop up her ailing business, and she decided Jenny Moran was her way out. So, she deliberately isolated her grandmother. She made sure no doctor saw her. She systematically reduced her food and drink, and when she was dead, when the plan had worked, she shed crocodile tears, quietly called the border agency to shop the only witness to her crime, and then went down to the bank and cashed in. The convulsions, the cramping, the terrifying hallucinations, the abject terror as her body fed off itself. It wasn't God's will that Jenny Moran should starve to death. It was Connie's.
Jacob delivers a somber look, then nods to the judge, who returns the gesture. The judge nods at Vijay.
Smoke mirrors rabbits out of a hat. I'll be honest with you, sometimes we use them when our case is weak, when we want to try a little misdirection, when we've got nothing else in our armory. Not this time. Because in that list of simple facts, there was one the prosecution failed to mention just now. A little misdirection of their own. Reasonable doubt, and the truth is that no one, not one single expert witness, was able to say under oath and beyond reasonable doubt that Jenny Moran starved to death. That she was malnourished is undisputed. That she died because of that. That it can be proved categorically that the actions of Connie Moran caused the death of her grandmother. Not a single witness. Murder, where a person of sound mind unlawfully kills with intent. If you have no doubt that Connie Moran did all the things the prosecution allege and in so doing caused the death of her grandmother, you must find her guilty. But if you have any doubt at all, then it is equally your duty to return the only verdict possible in the light of the facts. No smoke, no mirrors, not guilty.
Connie and her mother pursed their lips resolutely as they swap looks. A middle-aged woman rises at the front of the jury.
Have you reached a verdict upon which you all agreed?
We have.
On the charge of the murder of Jenny Moran, do you find the defendant, Constance Moran, guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Connie's face relaxes into a smile of relief. She looks across at her mother, who's beaming. BJ, Kate, and all eyes along the line of lawyers turn towards Jacob, who stares ahead resolutely. Outside, on a grey day, Kate joins Jacob on the north bank of the Thames by the Millennium Bridge, gazing across the water at the Tate Modern.
You missed a meeting.
St. Anne's.
I made you excuses. But next time you go walkies, I am going to tie your shoelaces together.
They share a smirk, then gaze out again across the water.
You were right. Couldn't make up for Mum by punishing Connie Moran. Didn't stop me trying, though.
Look, I'm sorry. It was none of my business.
What do you think it cost her? Stand by and watch to actually make it possible for Jenny to kill herself, because that's what Jenny wanted. Connie had a duty of care. You think Jenny would say she didn't fulfill it? I couldn't even hold Mum's hand.
Jake.
And afterwards, she was prepared to go down for murder rather than betray her grandmother's wishes. Connie Moran was a better granddaughter after Jenny died than I was a son while Mum was still alive.
Assuming the jury got it right.
Oh, they did.
Are you sure about that, are you?
Like she said, if you're not a Catholic, you can't understand. Mortal sin kills the life of grace within us.
You're going back to the office?
I just need to clear my head. But, thanks for bothering.
Kate smiles forlornly as she watches Jacob walk away. Hazy light falls through tall windows of a stone church, silhouetting a statue of Christ. Jacob walks solemnly down the aisle. A priest slides back the grill of a confession box. Jacob is on the other side.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.
Audio description by Deluxe. The characters and events in this film are entirely fictitious, and accordingly any similarity between them and actual characters or events is entirely coincidental.